Hello and welcome to Scots Radio and episode 34. This is Frieda Morrison and we're back again with a hail heap of stories and adventures, sourced and sorted for your edification and entertainment, and a smidgen of fun. We step out of our summer clays and into the thermals for the seasonal hairsts, mists and fruits. Just the right time for a visit to the Edinburgh Food Festival to tempt your buds with recipes and fine soup. It's that time of year. And we delve into the pages of the Book of the Howlet, launched at Darnaway Castle in Murrayshire, written in Scots and English by James Robertson, via a 15th century poem. And we find out if it's being planned at this year's International Storytelling Festival. This year we include We Dare to Dream. Ah, that's coming after this track for the new CD for Box of Bananas. It's a foodie thing, yeah. This is for their album of that name, Geese a Smile. Start. That's Geese a Smile for the new CD for the Box of Bananas, engineered and produced by the Bananas and our ain soon sorter Richie Werner in this very studio. Good in Richie. Now listen to this.
He grat grisly grim and gave a great yowl, cheverin' and shiden with churlish cheer. Why is my fox, quod the file, fastened sae foul? my form and my feather maun freely but fair. My neb is nether as an oak, I am but an owl. Against nature in the nicht I walk into weir, I dare da docht in the day but droop as a dool. Nocht for shame of my shape and pert till appear, thus all their fouls for my filth has me at feed. That be a scene in their sight, to look out in the daylight, some will me dolefully dicht, some dine me to deed.
Oh, some dine me to deed. Donald Lunan fae Pegavney near Elgin reading a snippet for the Book of the Howlet, a 15th century poem by Richard Holland, a Scottish cleric, fae was chaplain to Archibald Douglas, the Earl of Murray. It's regarded as one of the great poem gems of medieval Scotland, and if you could mak out the gist of the text, it's about a howlet. That's an owl that's nae happy with the way he looks, ill, farred and ugsome, as the poem says. Well, the poem has been made into a book, well, twa books, een in Scots and een in English, adapted into prose by James Robertson and beautifully illustrated by Kate Leeper. The launch of the book was at Darnaway Castle, outside Forres in Murrayshire, in the great hall where the original poem would have been read in the 1440s. It's a historical moment, this. And what a hall. Well, afore the launch, I spoke to Jim Royan, fine butcher of that ilk fae Elgin, about how this occasion actually developed, and let him just tell us where we are in the first place.
Darnaway Castle is about 3 miles out of Forres, and it is the home of the Earls of Murray and has been for a very long time, 600, 700, 800 years, depending on which book you read.
Now, we're standing in this great hall. Describe it for us.
This hall is called the Randolph Hall, and it is the one bit of the castle that has remained here since about 1340, I think it is.
So would this be the place that they first recited the poem?
The poem was first recited in this hall. We reckon in 1448.
So this hall wouldn't have changed that much then?
It has hardly changed at all. In fact, there's a picture just beside us of it in 1800.
So you've got the wooden...
The wooden beams. These beams are oak beams that were harvested on the estate here, and the estate actually has the records as to where in the estate these oaks were felled.
Are they
the same age as the hall.
No way!
And the Earl of Murray himself, Lord Murray, discovered not so long ago, after they carbon dated some of the beams, that they were 100 years older than they thought they were.
Right. The book. How does a butcher fail? No, I'm not being cheeky. How does a butcher fail to get involved in supporting the publication of a poetry book for the 14th century?
Well,
15th century?
Well, it's an interesting story. It's a story within a story. My niece, who's a historian and who's here tonight, phoned me up in April 2014, and she said that they... the Scottish Text Society, of which she's the president, were relaunching the original book, which is written in Old Scots and has got 52 verses.
And that's the bits that Donald Lunan's going to be reciting.
That's the bits that Donald Lunan has recited, and we have got captured on sound.
You've captured Donald.
Yeah.
He's nae here now.
He's nae here, I'm afraid, he's on holiday. I couldn't read it, but I was getting a gist of how powerful a moral story it was, as well as an incredible story about birds. So I asked my niece Nicola to translate it into English, and when I saw the translation, I thought this needs to be exposed to a much wider audience. I took it upon myself to ask Nicola if it was okay to do this. She, of course, was pretty pleased about that, because it allowed access to a piece of Scottish history which is quite unique. I enabled it. I drifted along to the local library, and I said to the librarian, if I wanted to publish a book, how do I go about it? And she said, well, the first thing you need is a publisher. I said, yeah, I've got that, but how should that be then? And she said, well, Berlin Publication are a very well-known publishing house in Edinburgh. And by the way, she said, they also have a bookshop in Elgin. I thought, well, that's not a bad start.
That's not a bad start.
So next stage was that Sheila Campbell, the librarian in Elgin, said to me, and the next thing you need is a good illustrator. And I said, oh, yeah, I get that as well. But who should that be? Well, she said, you came that one of Scotland's foremost children's book illustrators, actually comes from Lossiemouth. And suddenly destiny kicked in, and this book was meant to happen. And James Robertson, who was then invited by Berlin to write or rewrite the story, is from Meagle. But when he crossed the Moray boundary today, he became an honorary Moravian.
The perfect person for the adaptation, I may say. And I'm going to be speaking to James and Kate Leeper, the illustrator, later on. James, enjoy the evening, because you've come a long way with
it. This has been a good one.
Enjoy it. Jim Ryan, enabler and fine butcher for Elgin. Now, the new text, as you heard there, was adapted by writer James Robertson and illustrated by Kate Leeper. Well, after the launch, I spoke to them both. First, James, on more of the story content.
The Book of the Hula is a book that's nearly 600 years old. It's a poem originally, but I've moved it into the 21st century and turned it into a wee story, really aimed at young readers and listeners. Mm-hmm. It's a kind of an ugly duckling kind of tale, really, about a wee owl, a wee hulet, who isn't very happy with the way he looks, and so he goes to the best looking bird that he kens, and that's the peacock, and says, "Could you have a word with nature to make me as bonny as you are?" Oh. And it goes through there. The peacock thinks, "Well, we better have a council of the birds to see how to go about this."
Aye.
And the birds all gather and they have a big feast and a party.
Okay.
And then they do summon nature. Now, I don't want to give the whole story away.
I was going to say stop
but,
there.
But things go a bit
aglie
because the hulet it kind of goes to his head. But it's also a story about the growth of the wee bird and turning into a fully grown owl.
Now, this is where I want to come in, because you said you had the challenges were to make it into a 21st century story. What does that mean?
Well, in the original poem, Kate and I felt that the story kind of ends on a bit of a downer note, in the sense that it's almost saying to the hula, know your place, but stay where you are and don't step out of line, don't get above your station. And we think, well, that's all right, but actually maybe a better message would be, know yourself, ken who you are, and then from that you'll have a better chance of a happier and more fulfilling existence. And that's really the extra twist that we put on the story, to turn it from a story that was about folk being kept in their place to actually saying, if you recognise your own worth and your value, then you'll have the best experience you can.
But you spoke about the historic moment this is, and us looking at culture in Scotland in this great hall. Is it an extremely important part of our culture, this?
Well, I think so. I would think so, wouldn't I? You know, being a writer, it's, as far as I can see, you know, I'm working out of a tradition that goes back hundreds and hundreds of years. Right. And it's really important that we recognise where that has come from and, you know, take it on to the next stage.
Now, the next stage, of course, the writing. Sitting across from us here is Kate Leeper, the illustrator, and James, the illustrations. I mean, that
they're gorgeous. I mean, they make, you know, I kind of look at my black and white words and think, well, they tell the story, but the real story is in the illustrations.
Your words are boring now. Kate, right, we're speaking about challenges here. Uh-huh. I've just gone, the launches that happened, you've been signing hundreds and hundreds of books. But what were your challenges when you were doing the illustrations?
Well, the first one was, because the story's about a young owl growing up during the course of the book, it was just really how to depict that same character, even though he's changing physically, he's changing during the course.
Otherwise, through his
uh-huh. And so one thing I did, because one thing that the publisher wanted was to have a medieval feel, was I added a, it's like a wee garter, but it's really a ribbon round his leg with a bell, similar to what hawking birds would maybe wear around their ankle. So it's a way to identify.
That's him.
Yes, through the course of the book. So this wee, at the start he's just a wee chick, a fluffy grey thing, and then at the end he's a fully fledged.
Did you get fond of him by any chance?
I did. I think it
I
was
tell.
When he, I think it's when he has his tantrum, because I think he's quite meek before that, but then he has a tantrum, and I just thought, oh, go for it.
Right, I'm going to ask James to finish off with a reading for the book. but he's looking at a page. It's one of my favourite pages with the peacock. I mean, describe us, Dave. The illustration that Kate's doing here is fantastic, isn't it? The detail.
It's absolutely gorgeous. Right. And the peacock is looking down in a very superior way at the wee hoolet. And I think on the previous page, I said it looks as though he's looking at him with a 100 eyes, mm-hmm. and it's certainly the feathers on the peacock's tail is just glorious, beautiful picture.
Beautiful colours, Kate.
Aye.
Would you read that page, that particular page?
Aye. Okay.
So again, it's late.
So the hoolet has basically asked if the peacock would apply to nature to make him look better than he thinks he does. Mm-hmm. That might no be a good ploy, the peacock answered. It's no often that nature gets things wrang, although when I look at ye, I'm no sure that she got you right. I'll tell you what I'll do. I will call a council of all the fish-eating and seed-gathering birds, and the scaffy birds too, and we'll see what they mark it. Sign the peacock cried on the papingo and said, "What do we start?" And the papingo said, "What do we start? What do we start?" And that was nae use of all. Say the peacock cried on the cushy-doo, who could write the wee bitty, and dictated the words on invitation. The cushy-doo wrote it out a handle times, and as fast as she scrieve it, and she was fast, but she was a richt slaister tae, the swallies wheeched the invitations of war, and delivered them baith near horn and far.
Beautiful. Kate James, congratulations. What a piece of work this is, and what a reaction you got tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
James Robertson and Kate Leeper. And what a book and what a triumph. Now the details. The Book of the Howlet, adapted by James Robertson, illustrated by Kate Leeper, published by BC Books, contactable info@berlin.co.uk, price £12.99. Published by BC Books, contactable, this is the email address, info@berlin.co.uk, and the price is £12.99, and it's published in both Scots and English. Great. Music again! This is one of my favourite Burn songs, done by one of my favourite bands, Iron Horse. This is Duncan Gray, this is singer Ross Kennedy.
Duncan Gray, come here to woo, ha ha, the wooing oat, unlike your nicht, we were foe, ha ha, the wooing oat. Maggie Coos, that heat for he, looked asclant and Uncle Ski, Garber, Duncan, stand a bee, ha ha, the wooing oat. Duncan fleeched and Duncan prayed, ha ha, the wooing oat. Meg was deep as Elsa Craig, ha ha, the wooing oat. Duncan sighed, bit written in, gratisine, bit clear and blood, sparkle out an hour in, ha ha, the wooing oat. Chance are but a tide, ha ha, the wooing oat. Slighted love is certified, ha ha, the wooing oat. Shall I like a fool, cohe, far a hearty hizzy dee? She may get a France for me, ha ha, the wooing oat. Ah, who it comes, the doctors tell, ha ha, the wooing oat. Meg grew sick as he grew hale, ha ha, the wooing oat. Something in her bosom rings, bar relief the sigh she brings. Ah, Harin, they spied such things, ha ha, the wooing oat. To grace, ha ha, the wooing oat. Maggie's was a pettiest case, ha ha, the wooing oat. Duncan could not be her death, swelling pity smeared his way. Now the cruising can't he bathe, ha ha, the wooing oat. Duncan Gray come here to woo, ha ha, the wooing oat. Unblithe your neck, we were foul, ha ha, the wooing oat. Maggie Coos, that he for he, Lotus Glen to Nungle Ski, Garber, Duncan, stand up be, ha ha, the wooing oats.
Mm-hmm. Duncan Gray and singer Ross Kennedy, the Iron Horse, and their CD, The Wind Shall Blow Forevermore. Now, the International Storytelling Festival is celebrating its 27th year this year, and part of that new programme is a project called Dare to Dream. The festival is on for Friday the 21st of October till the 31st, and is a 10-day celebration of storytelling and imagination, radiating out through the base at the Storytelling Centre on the Royal Mile in Edinburgh, to places all over Scotland. Now, you can download the festival programme through the festival website. But to give us more or an insight into some of the dreams and dare to dream, I spoke to the new National Storytelling Coordinator, Mary McFadden.
Dare to Dream is part of the Scottish International Storytelling Festival 2016. It's our local schools and communities campaign, which has taken place between September and November this year.
Right. Now, what's it inviting folk today?
Well, the festival invites folk all over Scotland, citizen makers and guardians of tradition, to think about their hopes and dreams for the future of their own local place, for themselves, for their school and for their communities.
Right, but it's not as simple as that. In order to dream the future, you're going to tell me you need to understand the past. So how does that fit in?
Well, that's where the storytelling comes in. Because as you say, in order to dream the future, you need to understand the past. And of course, every place, every person, every community has a story to tell. Mm-hmm. So this is also about discovering the stories of the past and then to ask, which stories for the future or your dreams would you like to tell to the world today?
That's a good one.
What stories would I take with you, and what would you leave behind you?
A lot of folk are new to the storytelling art, and I'm often asked, why is this storytelling important? What do you think?
Well, storytelling is kind of what underpins all of culture, in a way. All of the culture we have comes from this tradition of telling stories. Stories are at the very core of how we identify and express ourselves, how we interpret and shape our worlds together. And again, storytelling helps us connect to each other, to our past, to our places, and to our world. And together, we're empowered by these connections.
Right. There's a helica teacher's listening to this, and we would like to get involved in all this. Now, they're struggling through the itinerary of work they've got already. Why should they tack this on as well?
Well, it's a really easy way to get involved. All we're asking folk to do is to think about where they are and what their hopes and dreams are for the future. Mm-hmm. So we've created some free resources for schools that they can download and use.
They'll like that.
They will. So they can be found on our website. Mm-hmm. And there are lots of different ways folk can join in. You can join in a tiny wee way with a tweet or a picture, or you can go into it in more depth to discover the stories of your place and maybe come up with a story of your own, a new story for the future. Mm-hmm. You could maybe host a local event in your community, bringing people together to think about what's important to them about their local place. Or you could even think about inviting one of our storytellers to come and visit your school or a community group.
That'd be a good one. Right. Nuts and bolts, Mary McFadden. Fit. And how and far and how much?
Aye.
How do folk get in contact? How do they get involved?
Well, events are going to be happening across all of Scotland between September and November, as I said. But during the main festival itself, which runs from Friday the 21st of October to Monday the 31st of October, we're going to be highlighting some of the dreaming and storytelling activities that are happening. This will culminate on our Dare to Dream social media day. It's all newfangled these days, isn't it? Mm-hmm. On Thursday the 27th of October. And on this day, we invite every citizen maker in Scotland to share a dream for the future. And our aim is to make Scotland's collective imagination, or muckle dream, visible for the whole world to see.
Okay. There's me sharing a dream. I've got a dream, right? In fact, I've got quite a few dreams. But I want to share my dream. How do I share it?
We're just asking people to tell their people in their own communities. Mm-hmm. Or if you want to, you can share it on the internet, on these Facebook or Twitter. Or you can email me and I will share it on our website here. But the most important thing is that people take part and that they have a sort of think about what's important to them and share a story or two.
Mary McFadden, the National Storytelling Coordinator, speaking about Dare to Dream. And another bit of music new, this is for the new album for Blazing Fiddles, called North. This is Brayhead Cottage. there. Brayhead Cottage for Blazing Fiddles off their new album, Cad North. New Think in Pictures and Tastes. Listen to this for a menu. I'm going to be speaking about food. Are you listening, Richie?
I'm right here.
You like your food?
I do like my food. This is going to be interesting because I'm starving. So we'll see what happens here, eh?
I brought you doing rowies otherwise, Aberdeen, and they're sitting there.
Let me get my butteries.
You're just teasing us. Right, listen to this. This is for a menu, right?
Go on.
Katie Rogers, Knock Riach Crowdy, oats, pistachio and pomegranate with West End honey. Or, you got fancy it?
Oh, that sounds all right.
Or
to
you
me,
can do Isla Crab, Vereen, compressed tomatoes, pickled cucumber and seaweed salt.
Okay,
good in. Or you could have roast fillet of red deer, braised haunch, potato gelette, parsnip and king cabbage or cabbage. Or you could have heather scented panna cotta and Eden Mill gin raspberry sorbet.
Oh,
and
pudding sounds good.
Right, you're really hungry now?
Aye, I'm really fancying that pudding actually.
Well, this is part of a 5-course tasting menu.
Oh,
cooked and presented at this year's Edinburgh Food Festival by Section 33. Now, as you can imagine, Richie, it was a pleasure to join the cooks and their stalls in Charlotte Square in Edinburgh. The sun shone and the aromas and the tastes were stunning.
Oh,
are you still feeling hungry?
Gosh, honestly, I can barely speak for my
mouth. Keep looking at the roomies. Kyle Steele is the MD and the owner of Section 33. And before the food preparation, Kyle told my mare about Section 33.
Section 33 is an events business founded in Glasgow. We pop up in different locations in iconic buildings, everything from old disused swimming pools through to the theatre where Stan Laurel debuted, and put on fine dining and street food events with unsigned musicians, locally sourced produce, and just make sure everyone has a great time.
Now, but Section 33 has an iconic ring to it. What does it mean?
So Section 33, it's not something we shout about, but Section 33 is when, if you're unfortunate enough to be evicted from your house, be it through whatever means, it is an eviction notice by the council. So we feel that passionate about helping as many people as we can, and we donate a large part of our profit to those less fortunate, be it homeless, children in need, lots of different means.
Right, to the food.
Yes.
Right, into the food bit. You're in charge of the fine dining in this event as well. So it fits on the menu.
So we're starting off with, well, this menu was only released on Wednesday, so this is almost an exclusive. We're starting off with some beautiful line-caught mackerel, some chorizo and truffle polenta.
Everything from Scotland?
Everything from Scotland. Some lovely smoked Perthshire venison and a beautiful salad, some North Berwick lobster, through to the main of Aberdeen Angus beef, which is both sirloin and braised shin. And then finishing with Perthshire raspberries and a chocolate kind of feast.
Right. Why Scottish cuisine?
Because it's the best. It is the freshest, it is the most organic, and it also supports local businesses. And it's so important to us to try and boost Scottish economy by shopping locally. And with our, to give you an idea of size, some of our events feed anywhere between 1,500 and 6,000 people, so we're buying large quantities of food, and that in turn is helping loads of little businesses to thrive. It could be cheaper getting it from further afield, but we're not here to make silly money. We're here to ensure longevity of business.
But how do you find it? You must have folk out of place, looking at things, tasting
totally,
things.
Totally, years and years of running restaurants and events and things like that. I've just built relationships with the right kind of people.
So they keep you informed. It's so's got a really good wine and strawberries.
Exactly. We've got a nice brace of pheasant or whatever, and we take it often.
See, the thing about this, folk are going to hear this for you in the parts of Scotland. You're going to be inundated. I've got a good strawberry. I've got a good pheasant.
Totally.
I've got a good thing.
Send them our way. We'll use them.
So what's your favourite?
My favourite food?
Aye.
Oh, that's a tough one. I think the lobster on the next menu is pretty sensational. You can't go wrong with Scottish beef. I mean, it's just some of the best in the world. And the lamb we used in the last menu was melt in the mouth. We cooked it for 36 hours.
How far was that cake in your mind?
Ayrshire lamb.
Was it?
Yeah, Ayrshire lamb. And cost a fortune, but at the same time, consumers are so switched on now that they can tell the difference between a frozen, you know, shipped from halfway across the world product as opposed to a grass-fed, organic, Scottish, you know, animal. So we're so passionate about it.
I mean, I've been sitting watching Hugh Fernley putting dolls whole series about waste.
Yeah.
We waste a lot in Scotland, don't we?
Well, yeah, and that's something we did as well. We did an event with the Glasgow Restaurant Festival the first year. They overestimated what covers we would do, so we had a fair chunk of food left, about 5.5-6 grand, and we, after we finished on the final night, literally drove up to George Square in Glasgow and handed it out to homeless. Otherwise that food would have been in the bin. Other companies may have frozen it and reused it, but we felt, why should we offer fine dining or even street food to people who have cash and money, but not include people who can't afford it? So yeah, we try not to waste anything.
Kyle, what occurs to me is that this should be happening in our Scotland.
Yeah,
this is predominantly happening in the central belt, isn't it?
Yeah, Glasgow.
I mean, it should be happening in our... If Frog wanted to start something like this, how would they do it? How would they gang up with it?
Come and speak to me and I'll give advice, because the more people that do this, the more demand there will be. You know, it's supply and demand, and we've been fighting hard for a couple of years to push through, and now we're starting to get really recognised. We won a couple of really big awards recently, a social responsibility award for our work with charity. And like I say, it's not something we push marketing wise, but if I've had a few folk ask for consultancy, and if I can help people, then it makes it even better for everyone.
I'm going to get you to do your contact details in a minute, but I can't help but recognise the enthusiasm and your voice even.
Totally.
It's just, you love it, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I've worked for big companies, big English brands, you know, international brands for the last 10 years, and the reason why I started this business was because my granny, a red-haired, fiery Scottish woman, used to say, you know, Kyle, when are you going to get a real job? You can't be in the restaurant trade, you can't be feeding people, this isn't a real job, and she wanted me to be a plasterer. And I feel like if we can use locally sourced produce, and with a charity aspect, it becomes more reputable and it becomes a bigger business for everyone involved. So I just love it. And I've got two young daughters that my job is just to inspire them to lead a good life. So.
And cook at home.
And yeah, I cook all the time with them. When I'm at home, we do lots and lots and lots of dishes. But yeah, it's just, you only get one life, so you got to push for it.
You're inspiring me.
No, not at all.
Yeah, you're inspiration. Right. Brass tacks, fit your contact details, Kyle. How are the folk getting?
So yeah, all details are online. So the website is section-33.com, or even if you just search Kyle Steele Glasgow or Section 33 Glasgow, everything will come up.
A lot of folk are desperate to find fine dining, but there's good food in Scotland. We produce, I mean, one of my biggest bugbears is the amount of just the regular style of menu you find in every restaurant with frozen chips.
That's it?
That is my bugbear.
We don't do chips. Although my mum would like me to do chips, we don't do chips. Honestly.
At least hand-cut chips if you did
Totally. I think as well, what we do with fine dining is people have this theory that fine dining has to be starched cloths and very formal. We break it up. We do fine dining food with incredible musicians and really personal service. You know, just people having a good laugh.
So you involve music in this fine dining in the food thing?
Only unsigned Glasgow and Edinburgh musicians, and try and boost their profile as well. So for the last fine dining one, we used a very small coffee company called All Started Here. And it's one guy who still works part-time doing it, but is so passionate about the coffee that he does. And by us using him and promoting him to our audience, it's helping his business. So for musicians, for small traders, for everyone, we just need to make it work for us all.
You're an inspiration. No, the Twill Eggs,
not at all.
It's a pleasure meeting you.
You too. It's not at all.
Kyle Steele, MD and owner of Section 33. A great idea and great food. Congratulations, Kyle. And across the tables and folk sitting, eating and drinking, I spied the Edinburgh Slow Food Stall. Aye, a good place for the fine Scottish fare. And joy, oh joys, there was food writer Rachel Gillen, Fair Renfrewshire, heating up a frying pan.
Scottish salmon, Scottish farmed salmon, we're specialising in today, just to showcase that to the public, just to give them some ideas of just better, how they can cook it, how they can incorporate it into their diet, because many people that I come across actually don't know how to cook fish.
I just thought you'd just put it in a frying pan, that's it.
You know, I think one of the good things about salmon is it's such a versatile fish, so it can be used in so many different ways. I mean, it's a breakfast fish. It can be used for lunch, for sandwiches, for salads, and then it can be used as part of a main meal. And it takes on so many different flavours. You know, it's good with spices, it's good with herbs, it's good just pan-fried on its own. So it really is one of the... it's a real king of fish when it comes to using it with other ingredients. And healthy, of course,
right,
as well.
There I am. I like fish. I love fish. But I haven't been a big fan of salmon because it's boring. I just plonk it in the frying pan and that's it. Tell me where I'm going wrong.
Well, you need to add some extra flavour into it. Today we're cooking three different types. We're cooking one with chilies and ginger and honey. We're cooking it, we're pan frying another one and serving it with rocket and shiitake mushrooms and a teriyaki dressing. It's great in curries, it's great in pasta, it's great in fish pie along with other fish. You can serve, you know, with herbs, salsa verde alongside it. You can coat it in breadcrumbs that have got other ingredients and pan fry it. You can make kebabs with it. So the list is endless for what you can do with it. And there's lots of good recipes for salmon on the Scottish Salmon Producers website. They're obviously the industry body for the farming industry in Scotland. So and people can go on there and access different recipes, give them some new ideas.
I'm thinking deeply. I'm thinking I missed a lot to do with salmon. I have totally underestimated the potential here.
I think you have, because you know there's a million salmon meals eaten in the UK every day, so a lot of people are definitely not missing out there. Even the Queen, Her Majesty the Queen, has her little portions of salmon every week too, so it's a really popular fish and kids love it. It's the one thing I found at demonstrations, that when kids come along they really like salmon.
Part of yours as well, Cumming Scoot. It's one of your favourites.
It is one of my favourites. I absolutely adore it. I make that regularly. And you know, and we can incorporate even salmon and things into these dishes as well. Yeah. Things that we use, any smoked fish for, we can use, you know, hot smoked salmon as well for that.
We've got a huge resource of history and tradition in cooking and fish, haven't we, in this country?
Oh, going right back. I mean, you think back to the herring industry. That was, you know, a really traditional industry on both coasts in Scotland. And then, you know, salmon is now the biggest, it's probably the biggest rural industry in Scotland, you know, for right through the islands and right as far as the north of Scotland.
Is there any spare Cullen Skink going?
I'm sure there will be. If you stay around, there'll be a few dishes going very shortly, because I'm just about to start cooking that salmon.
Rachel Gillen cooking up lovely tastes at the Slow Food Edinburgh stall. And Richie, tell us just what you had for your breakfast.
I had a bit of lovely smoked salmon with a bit of scrambled egg, and it was fantastic.
I had a bit of breed.
A bit of breed? Oh dear.
Right, I'll give your senses and buds a bit of a break for a bit of music before I take you to meet Warren Badder, who Plan B. And fit Warren is dealing with yon bees, and their honey is amazing. Honey beer, even. But back to that after twa Orkney polkas for the Wrigley sisters, Jennifer and Hazel, for their album Idiom. This is Merlin's polka and Peter Pratt's polka. Orkney duo Jennifer and Hazel Wrigley, twa Orkney polkas for their album Idiom. So back to the Edinburgh Food Festival at Charlotte Square, among the stalls and the grills and the ovens, for a taste o' honey and fit a taste. At this time of the year, beekeepers are nervously looking into their hives over Scotland to tack out the frames of honey, hopefully they're full. Well, Warren Badder has got his extractions and honey supply sorted out. He's the founder and CEO of Plan B, based in Wishaw. And as I sipped and sampled, sitting at his wee stall, Warren told me mair about Plan B.
Plan B was a company that I started to help protect and promote the interest of the humble honeybee, and to produce honeys from Scotland and Great Britain that are authentic, that are real, and to make people really aware of all the issues going on with honeybees and to understand their importance to us.
Now, you've got the most amazing selection of products here. I haven't seen this before, Warren. It's this being a Scots radio programme, I will speak to you in Scots. Can you understand? If you're based in Wishaw, you will understand what I'm saying.
Yes.
Anyway. I've never seen it, anything like this before. I mean, just give us a wee trip round some of your stall here. What's on here?
Well, we've got our honey gar, which is honey mixed with British apple cider vinegar.
That's what I've just tasted.
Exactly.
That's lovely.
That's got the mother culture. And that's... it's so versatile, and that product is my little baby because it's so versatile. You can use it as a salad dressing in place of balsamic. It's got very good health benefit properties as well, taking apple cider vinegar, and we've combined our honey with it to just round it off a little bit.
But it's a good drink when you can just drink it straight from the cup.
Absolutely, you can drink it as it is, you can dilute it with water. It's fantastic on Scottish strawberries, it's incredible on beetroot, watermelon, it's so versatile.
But I'm looking across the stall here, you got beehive bray beer, honey beer,
yes.
And you've got another bottle of honey beer across there, yeah. On the red label, and then you've got the dressing up there, across,
yes.
There. And all the tasters, but you've also got seed bombs now. Tell me about the seed bombs.
Well, the seed bombs are basically these recycled and paper mache wildflower seed bombs that people can lob into derelict areas, along the motorways, anywhere that they think that needs some beautification. But most importantly, it's to create corridors of wildflowers for all insect pollinators, and these wildflowers will self-seed and they'll just grow, and we'll have these large swathes of motorways or industrial areas or neglected areas that are just a beauty to behold, and that's really what I want to do.
Now, judging by your accent, you're not from Scotland.
That's
whereabouts are you from, Warren?
I'm South African, and I came to the UK in 1999. I used to be a film producer, and then I got the interest in bees just took over my life, basically. And so that's kind of my story in short.
And Scotland? Why Scotland? Is it good for bees?
It's very challenging environment with the weather. This year has been very good. Last year was dreadful. But, you know, Scotland's just got the most incredible reputation for producing good food, quality food. We've got fantastic fresh air. We've got beautiful landscapes. And part of the reason why I got into doing the honey was I went to a National Trust property once, and there was only honey available from New Zealand and all over the world, bar Scotland. And I thought, I was really kind of insulted that they didn't have Scottish honey for sale.
I think you're echoing a lot of folks' feelings when you're saying that. And then it just came to you that why didn't you just
start up your own company? It was as simple as that?
Absolutely. It was just, that was literally it. We've been going for 5 years. We've had some interesting times. But we, you know, it's been a joy, and I've been able to employ about 8 people that I've taken off, the dole basically, and put them into work. And that's been hugely rewarding for me, to be honest with you, is to give people hope and to give them a job that has got worth. So not denigrating working for any major multiple retailer or anything like that, but a lot of these jobs that people get put into, shelf stacking and things like that, aren't exactly...
No, but I'm looking across here at your stall, and I'm just focusing on Scottish heather honey. Now, that must be the prize of the whole place.
Oh, gosh, yes. I'm very proud of that. And that won 2 gold stars at the Guild of Fine Food. And 2 out of 3 gold stars is pretty good.
That's pretty good. So how do you get your honey? Do you keep hives yourself?
Yes, we have approximately 300 hives. A lot of them, the basis of the company is that we rent hives out to organizations. We work with the likes of L'Oreal, Kellogg's, Low Carbon, Aunt Bessie's.
So you position the hives on their land.
That's right.
But you have to have trained beekeepers. Do you train the beekeepers?
We're training them up, and we've got a staff of 3 beekeepers that manage the hives, and we help the company. It's part of these companies' environmental and sustainability message as well. It's a key part of it.
Right. I want to get some of the mother source, or the, what did you call it?
The mother culture.
The mother culture. I'm going to take back some of the mother culture and see if I can influence my cooking standards and presentation. That's what I'm trying to do here, Warren, as well, improve my... But I just think your stall and your ideas is fantastic. Congratulations.
Thank you very, very much. I'm very... very, very pleased. I'm pleased with the beer as well. The Beehive Bray, the honey beer. The red just got a gold star at the Guild of Fine Foods. The the blonde has been in Oldie on promotion last month, and it's going back in...
I'm so pleased for you. One last question.
Yes.
What kind of films did you do?
Oh, I did a lot of commercials and music videos. So I produced music videos for a lady called Tina Turner and a boy band called Boyzone and U2. And
I just had to ask a question. Oh, congratulations, Warren. Thank you. You made my day.
Thank you very much.
You just never can far canes far, as they say. That was Warren Bader for the company Plan B. Great idea. And fit a pleasure to meet so many food enthusiasts working around Scotland, among the finest food the country has to offer. And that brings us to the end of this episode. And we finish with a track that must be among the finest music we have to offer. Afore I go, I consult the oracle in the wheelhouse. If that's not too much of a mix, fit ever it's got. Richie O'Soonsorter is fair knacky in the kitchen. I have teen doon my tomatoes, as I said, and Rowies for Aberdeenshire. No expense spared here.
Tell you what, those were some of the finest tomatoes I've ever had. You should have seen this, folks. It was all the colours of the sun. That was beautiful.
I can eat tomatoes. And you liked Warren Bader,
didn't
you?
Tasty fruit. Warren's, what a fantastic guy. And who knew he's did all those amazing music videos as well. What a diverse man.
So, Richie, we finish with a track for a CD produced by Hamish Moore and Ian McInnes for the Lowland and Border Piper Society. The CD is called Reclaimed. And this is a tune composed by Gary West of that ilk, the Jedburgh Bar Game, that won first prize in 2013 in the Lowland and Border Pipe Society 30th Anniversary Tune Competition. Right. Can I just give you a wee reminder about our website address as well? It's www.scotsradio.com. And join us again. Till then, bye do to bother, if you can. It's nae easy sometimes. On with the music, and Gary, Stu and Richie, Gary West and Kieran Ryan,
and the Jedburgh Bar Game. The tune is preceded by a recording of the wonderful Border Shepherd and singer Willie Scott, who I heard singing at the Blairgowrie Folk Festival a good few years ago. Willie is describing the Bar Game in 1986, and this is by kind permission of the School of Scottish Studies, University of Edinburgh. Fae me, Frieda Morrison, and our soon-sorter Richie Werner. Are you there?
I'm here.
By the new.
By the new.
Bring on the rowies!
Hey!
Bar like a cricket bar. I decorated it with ribbons. Somebody's got merit against this bar. And it's thrown in among the folk and it's them to get hairless and there's so many guns up the way and so many guns down. Talk about tappies in the doonies. And then the water, you know, right in here. In fact, it's the liquor rugby match. Now that somebody say, oh, that's lost. I'll pull away to the pub and have a drink. And it's funny what's come to that bar. I'll come for the boys, and it is up in his pullover. It couldn't in the crowd. And I'll come slithering to the water. Oh, that's not good, that.